directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Protecting the king, huh? We be protecting our kings. Yeah, we be out here protecting the king. Black Panther, that's black thighs. Black Panther got black wives. Black Panther got black ties. Black Panther, we black rising. We be protecting our kings. Yeah, we be out here protecting the king. We be protecting our kings. Yeah, we be out here protecting the king. Black Panther, that's black vibes. Black Panther got black wives. Black Panther got black ties. Black Panther, we black rising. King with a Q, queen with a K. Whatever your preference, just say the name. When he come home, then I'm his relief. If you come for his dome, then I'm in the streets. Still smoke, but I won't chill. Your jokes seem all too real. You choke when I say the feels. And now you're soaked because you see my fears. We need to get the focus on melanin popping. Instead of melanin's dropping. Black men, we see your worth. We built an army, so just say the word.
Your shame, we mad at you. Fuck your shame, we still mad at home.
We be protecting our kings. Yeah, we be out here protecting the king. We be protecting our kings. Yeah, we be out here protecting the king. Black Panther, that's black vibes. Black Panther got black wives. Black Panther got black ties. Black Panther, we black rising. We be protecting our kings. Yeah, we be out here protecting the king. We be protecting our kings. Yeah, we be out here protecting the king. Black Panther, that's black vibes. Black
My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, on the air, no stranger to the Soul P Airwaves. CKUT Airwaves is Marilyn Cherie. The definition of Marilyn takes its roots in Haiti. Before leaving the Pearl of the Antilles to immigrate in Canada, her father used to write plays and perform them for the people of his town to cheer them up. Through the years, her father transmitted her his stories, his love for acting, words, and his artistic strength. Actress of Haitian descent, dramaturg, and improviser, Marilyn has studied theater at Concordia University. In 2018, she was invited to the 17th French World Summit in Armenia, Erevan, where she performed and gave workshops in acting and creative writing. Marilyn, welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so nice.
First of all, happy new year. Wishing you all the best for 2022. All the good things, you know, that's what we're putting in. We're in the middle of a pandemic. I don't know what to say to my guests anymore. Are we in the middle? Are we in the end? Where are we? Like, where
were we? We're like in the eye of the tornado, man. Like, that's
no,
that's,
but if we're in the eye, then that means that everything is cool because the eye is the calmest part. Like, you want
to
be
nobody
in the
has
eye.
The answer to that. Seriously, we are.
It's a crazy time.
The third dose, the booster. I don't know what we're doing.
Listen,
I don't know what we're doing.
Listen, you don't know, I don't know. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
The pandemic I've seen.
Oh, no. We're living something very interesting that nobody else ever went through. So at the same time, I'm like, we're making history.
But we're living it, but we're experiencing it. But nobody has been through this in a long time. Like, it's been a long time since there was a worldwide, like, pandemic style thing.
Yeah.
You know, there has been Ebola and there has been H1N1, but it never quite hit the world on a global scale.
So, and seriously, we have Netflix. We have so many things. I can't even complain.
We can distract ourselves.
Yeah.
We're
good. We're good.
Pretty
we're in
good.
A good place.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're privileged. We're privileged.
Yep.
We are. You know, if you can say that you have Netflix, I mean, that's a privilege. That's not a right.
That's a privilege, you know? Like, I've been a plant mom during all of this pandemic. I've been growing plants. I've been having fun, like, you know, having time to read books, all the novels. That I wanted to read for so long,
right. And
it's time that's not coming back, so I just used it to my advantage.
So that goes with the first question that we normally ask on the show. How have you been during this this amazingly strange yet wonderful for some folks yet not so good for others situation?
Seriously, it's been a lot of questioning, like, do you continue in the arts? The government is saying that, like, you're non-essential. What do you do with yourself, especially as an actor or performer? All the, you know, stage, everything was closed down. Just there's nothing to do. So you start to reevaluate your life.
100%.
I'm thinking, in the next few years, even if it's coming back, is this the right path to go?
Right.
To continue? Was really hard.
Yeah.
Was really hard. But I'm a writer.
Okay.
So fortunately for me, I didn't have to rely on acting only. And I've been writing for so long, so it was nice. So like I said, I could read, I could research, I could think of new means to do art and performances. And I've been trying to go back to, you know, suitcase theater and stuff like that. And like how
what's way suitcase back theater?
It's, you know, it's just the idea that like way back people would just travel from town to town to present. Like it was more so circus, was okay. More so like performances.
Mm-hmm.
And people were really attracted. It was to, you know, loosen up, make people feel good the same way that my father did in Haiti way back. And it was just, I started to think about that. Do we really need a big ass theater that costs so much money, or right. Can we do stuff on a smaller scale and make it accessible to people?
Right.
So yeah, like it made me think about a lot of things, and also waste, you know, right. Because theaters, cinemas, films, the film industry, everybody's wasting so much.
Right.
You know,
they do produce a lot of waste.
And we never recover from it. So.
Right.
I started to think about that, but it was a, you know, pandemic, you sleep.
Yeah.
I slept. It went so fast. Everything was going so fast. Now we're back ish. Mm-hmm. We're not back, but we're back, and it's going even faster, I find.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very disturbing. And I think that like the break that we had, we're not realizing, I don't know. I don't think we learned our lesson, you know, waste wise or, yeah, like I walk in the streets. I went to some of them, to UCAM and Concordia and like universities. And I'm just like, how is it that like you have a pile of garbage like everywhere? I don't understand. Right. Like in the I don't get it. And it's just like, I feel like we haven't learned our lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know. I became just like more aware of things around me and people. And like in the neighborhood where I live, it's just, you know, I live like in Hochelaga, but really on St. Catherine. Okay. And I live where there used to be this like big house of prostitution.
Okay.
Way back. And like at the corner, it's really nice where I live, but it's just like there's a lot of residue from that. And like there's a lot of sex workers.
Right.
And, you know, it's just like during the pandemic, it was really hard. So I just like talk to them or try to just better understand their realities, because it's winter, you know, it's cold outside. Yeah. Just like seeing people as human rather than like obstacles, I guess.
Right.
Because right behind where I live, there used to be the barricade that like they dismantled like with the city of people that were homeless. It was right behind.
Wow. Where I live. So it was like a homeless city, like a small city for homeless.
Yeah, it
folks.
Was a small city, and it's just like how off for like kilometers, police cars on bikes, name it. They were all there, and they destroyed everything that these people had. It was very intense. So I don't know. I've seen a lot of things during the pandemic. So it just made me think about my place and what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, because we are privileged to do art.
Right.
And thinking about why do you create art and what is this art?
But are we privileged to do art though?
Yes.
Is it
no.
a privilege? Because I feel like art, even though the government defines art as non-essential, I feel like people turn to art in order to seek comfort. I mean, like when I forget often how much I love music, for example, and then after I've gone through, like I work the night shift. So that's really difficult at times on the body, physical body. And then I'm, you know, it's a very physical labor job. And I often forget how freeing music is. And people don't always see music as art, but it's an artistic form. You know, it's extremely creative. It's extremely freeing. And I've been contemplating this idea of art as a non-essential work. And I'm like, no, like Netflix and Disney Plus and Amazon Prime have been essential to people's well-being mental and their health. Need to, exactly, their mental health and their need to escape from the reality once they step outside their door, put on a mask, sanitize, scared of people, and people deciding they don't want to wear their mask, and you're like, oh, you're going to strangle them. You know, like, you come home, you turn on some Netflix or you put on some music, and you go, yep. And breathe. I think it's so unfair that it's considered non-essential. It's considered a privilege. I mean,
it's because
what would we do without art?
I don't know. And I feel that the government or people around you, it could be your friends, could be your family. They just don't understand how much time and work goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's long, you know, it's like a pianist, like that person's going to work and to train all their lives to get to the point where they are in an orchestra or something, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy, and I think a lot of people don't realize that. Yeah, like a lot of people don't realize that, and it's just all the work that goes into it. So yeah, it is essential. It's just that it's not, you can't see the results or the money as fast as something else, I guess. And that's why
Absolutely.
People think that it's easy. And that's why artists, I feel, we are always asked to do things for free, you know?
100%.
Which is very annoying. And I think there's a point in your life, depending on what you're doing, if you're a painter or like you sew dresses or whatever, just that you really need to assert yourself and stop doing
for free labor, or nothing,
right?
Little narrow next to nothing.
You really have to assert yourself and step into your power and you know, make people understand that like what you're doing is important, and that you are a professional and that you deserve to be paid for your time.
Absolutely.
But it's just, I guess it's a calculation. Like people don't see how to like, how much should I pay this person for this? Or anyways, yeah.
This is something I've contemplated for a long time, and what I've been saying to people, especially when I find someone who's young and they're asking me, you know, about life as an artist and like charging people and whatnot, I say to them, listen, look at your art as if you're working per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Evaluate how many hours you need to do that. So it could be anything from doing a painting to creating beats for a singer, songwriter, rapper, a theater piece, for example. Break it down. And there's multiple breakdowns. There's the first breakdown is how much dollars per hour is the value of your skills. And put a number amount to it. Now, whatever your tools are, put a decreasing. So if you have a laptop and the laptop costs you $1,000, a percentage of that money that you're charging needs to go into that.
Yeah.
Now, you take about, a lot of people have gone to school, right? Mm-hmm. You went to theater school. You went to Concordia. Take that, what you spent on Concordia, and take a percentage out of that. Yeah. Add that to the amount. When you've added up all of that together, time, tools, skills, then you have your amount. And if it's $100 per hour, brethren, it's $100 per hour.
That's what it is. And because people are really scared to ask for money.
Yeah.
That's what I realized. They're really, really scared. But, I mean, are you going to do it for free?
Exactly.
No.
And
like, we paid for our education, our skills, or workshops, or whatnot. So,
exactly.
Get that money back. Basically, it was an investment at this point.
And also,
get it back, right?
If you look at it another way, 10 people might not be willing to pay you $100 an hour for 10 hours, which is $1,000 for what you're going to charge in full. But 2 people might be willing to pay you that $100 an hour for 10 hours. So you would have $2,000 for 20 hours worth of work. If I work 40 hours a week, I'm not making that much. You know, like I have to work almost 60 hours in order to make that much. So it's such an interesting thing that we even, like, I feel like there needs to be a course given to all artists. Like, you need a, it's a specific business course designed for artists whereby you are taught how to break down everything so that you know your value once you've graduated from university.
It's just like they never teach you that. And it's easy for a teacher to say whatever they want because they get a paycheck every 2 weeks.
But
if you don't want to be a teacher, if you want to be an artist, like, you need to know how to take care of yourself and to deal with your finances.
Exactly.
Right? So that's a conversation I'm having with a lot of friends still, because weirdly enough, I became like self-employed during the pandemic, and I'm doing great because I have time to sleep. I have time to do whatever I want. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's a leap of faith, and you need to take it, and you need to trust in your skills and what you have to offer.
Yeah.
But I would never see myself. I would never see myself right now going back to a 9-to-5. Okay. It's just like so much of your time and so much. It's so draining. You know, it's just, there's so many projects and stuff that you want to do, or just taking care of yourself, taking care of my baby plants that I want to just do whenever I want, right?
Mm-hmm.
On my own terms and time. So it's just like understanding that although we have bills and we're scared and all that jazz, we need to start living in the moment. And that today, like, what if you die tomorrow? You don't know, but like, just be happy that you're doing what you love. Mm. And money, also what I've learned during the pandemic, like, it comes and goes.
Yeah.
So you'll find a way. Like, if you are faced with a situation that you need to make it work, you'll make it work.
Yes.
But it's better to be working in a field that you love. Mm. Yeah. And something that you like.
Yes.
And be able to sleep and go to the events and stuff.
And do what you want to do. Exactly.
For your own self-care.
Right. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time this evening, we are speaking to Marilyn Cherie. We're going to have to take a quick break, pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
This is OK Heat.
Miss Benzo.
Yeah, we got them gold blunts, 24 karat gold blunts, huh? Them cold ain't for a whole month. Ballin' with my salary, get on my level. Don't even try to say hello. I see you shaky like jello. I'm using caution like yellow. Stay cool like flip side of pillows. I'm feeling this instrumental. It's hot like a tea. Low key is flossin' like dental. My flow will with your mental infectious, need you some dental. Virgo, which I never settle. I am the queen, do you mean? Killing the scene, stacking the green. I got the ask about me. If you can't see, I said I'm the queen. Now you need to put this on the pedestal. You know how it could. Got a demon at the prison.
Do you know that you got a 24 karat gun? Put your name on it.
Doom 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 fa la 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 fa la 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 fa la 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 vivez-vous les mains.
Vous connaissez la chanson? Célébrez avec vos proches, mais continuez de suivre les mesures sanitaires en vigueur. Lavez-vous les mains régulièrement et maintenez une distance d'un mètre. A message du gouvernement du Québec.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. It's another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I am here this evening with Marilyn Cherie, who, aside from being an actress of Haitian descent, dramaturg, and improviser, was also part of the 2018-2019 Black Theater Workshop Artist Mentorship Program. And you may have seen her, if you're a theater goer, in many, many different plays. This includes Projet Racine at Espace Libre in 2021. She was part of the duo En Vitrine, produced by Théâtre Inc., in 2021. Listen, young lady, you have been busy in 2021. The Portico Project, the exchange at Centaur Theater in 2021. And of course, her own piece, Aphrodisiac, that was the most recent one before the end of the year at the Siegel Center for the Performing Arts 2021, obviously.
2021.
Because, you know, you didn't do anything before that. I mean, like, come on.
But weirdly enough, 2021 was very busy theater-wise.
That was a very fruitful year for you.
Yes. Right. That's funny. I don't know why it happened.
Okay. So you said that you were writing a lot during the pandemic. So tell us a little bit about that. Like what, and you became a plant mom. So tell us a little bit about maybe how that intersected into your life.
Okay. So the plant mom happened because, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020, where there were hoarders everywhere, toilet paper and all that jazz. It was pretty intense. And then we were all stuck at home wondering what the world, like, when is it going to explode?
When the zombies were going to start running past our windows. Yes.
Plant Mom happened because I would watch all these videos of, you can just cut ginger and put it in water and then replant it. And I got very like, oh my God, seeds. I can use so many seeds. And then I just started to do that, and it was very soothing, and I call it like green therapy, and that was nice. Like, that was a really good way to just come back, ground myself up, and be, hey, I'm creating life, and
literally.
Plant Mom,
and
is
you're
great,
caring.
And
you're caring and loving something other than yourself.
Yes, and I keep it going. Like, I didn't, you know, like most people learn to do bread and then let it go. No, I'm continuing. I have a lot of babies, very happy.
Okay.
It's very good to just, take care of something else.
Okay.
Could be an animal. I know a lot of people who bought like cat, dogs, whatever, but needs plants. So that's
Fair enough. Fair
enough. Continuing the journey.
Yes.
Writing, I've been writing forever. Okay. Ever since like elementary school, just because I was in a family where I didn't really have like gadgets or like even a computer until very late in my life, like until, I don't know, like 15 or 16.
Okay.
Like, we didn't have like the internet or anything.
Right.
So it's just, I would write a lot. And I mean, you know, it like surely it's just that, I mean, my parents, they're Haitian, and it was just like most of the books and the novels that I had were classics. So I used to read a lot of very intense classical books in elementary school already. Mm-hmm. So it's like my vocabulary and everything was already very researched.
Advanced. Yeah.
And so I love to write. And I've been writing forever. And at some point in my life, I thought that I wanted to be a scientist to find a remedy against
COVID-19?
For autism. And I was like, I'm going to do that. And then I realized I suck at math. I suck at biology. I suck at everything.
Okay.
So I can't do it.
Hey, but when reality hits you, you pivot.
But I'm loud. I'm loud, like my dad. So I went into theater, which is, you know, at first I wanted to be, I wanted to go in visual art. Because I love drawing and painting. But then my Haitian dad said no, because, you know, I can't go in visual arts. And then I said I wanted to go into films to do script writing. And he said yes, weirdly enough, because film is so much better than visual arts.
Allegedly.
See? And at some point, I just switched because I was tired of I don't know, auditioning people, I guess,
right,
at some point, like during my studies. And I was just like, well, I do a lot of improv. I'm very vocal. Let me try theater. And then I switched to acting, but keeping the writing with me.
Right.
And yeah, and I kept on writing, but then it switched from TV and screen to theater. And mm-hmm. I've always liked like cirque and performances. So yeah. And I just kept on writing during the pandemic. But if with everything happening, you know, in Canada and all over the world, mm-hmm. it's been very, you know, I think we were unpacking a lot of things.
Yes, for sure.
And then my activism, feminism side just came back okay. more strongly. And I thought, well, writing is my tool, but I studied in theater, so I might as well write very engaged pieces, you know, for people. And mm-hmm. right now I thought that there's not a lot of dramaturge, like French dramaturge of like that are Afro-descendant. There's none,
right.
Not a lot in Quebec. Mm. There's a lot in on the English side.
Yes.
And in Canada, but like French wise in Quebec, there isn't.
Very few.
So I really wanted to write pieces in French first, and then I can translate them. Doesn't matter, but it's just like for like all the French brown community in Quebec, because we don't really have a lot of plays, a lot of pieces, and I wanted to come from the community rather than, you know, from elsewhere. Yeah. Or being like Americanized or yeah.
Yeah, rather than someone else telling our story or telling a story that supposedly represents us, quote unquote, tell you want to tell the story yourself.
Yeah, and also because I've come to realize that, you know, ever since they did Raisin in the Sun, Héritage at Ducep, it's mm-hmm. just like, I feel that the theaters, right now, there's a big pressure for inclusion and diversity, but it doesn't mean that like the production, the creative teams are diverse at all, right? It's
right.
just I feel that like the French theaters, more so Ducep or TNM, they're really realize, and even Disney Specialty, they're realizing that there's a lot of money to be made within marginalized communities, so they mm-hmm. will just, you know, hire one or two brown Latinx actors or whatever, and then make the dollar off right. of it. But it's not like the story was written by someone from the community, or that the whole overall team is diverse at all. It's still like a very white space that you in which you cohabit, like as an artist, right? Of color. And I don't really like that. So I want that to change.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And if you want something to change, then you have to be the change yourself.
You have to do it.
Right.
And also have conversation with people to make them realize that. You know, yeah. a lot of people also who came to my show, there are things like they kind of realized it. They're like, oh, it's true. Yeah, there were only like brown actors, but actually the director, the team are you know, they're all white. I'm just, well, yeah. So is it really a brown story
yeah.
or is it a white story with brown bodies on stage?
Ooh, that is so interesting. Wow. That it reminds me of I believe it was Clybourne Park that was produced at Centaur a few years ago, where it was kind of like yeah. almost like the follow-up to A Raisin in the Sun. And it was yeah. written by a white man, and the main characters were the white people, and the black folks were kind of like not really the main characters, you know. And it's like it's a follow-up of a very historically like significant play, and you whitewashed it, you know. So it's interesting that you want to start taking on do I want to call it a battle, because you know we've been fighting it for so long.
I don't want to call it a battle. Seriously, I just want to give space and voice to brown bodies.
Yeah.
And what I can say is that after doing my show,
mm-hmm.
it was so heartwarming and nice to see all these people coming together in this space. You know, it's just like all these brown bodies at the Siegel Center was mm-hmm. so nice to see. And I just had like women coming from, and men coming from Anjou, jusque dans Anjou. They came down for the show.
Yeah.
They cried. They were laughing. They had a fucking blast, man. And it was just great to see that and this communion and just all these people who needed this. And even the English community came to see the show, although it was in French. And they were just like, when are you translating this? We need this. We want this. And it's just like a new breath, you know, fresh air. And people were really happy. Young people were really happy too. It was nice because the story is around like the life of this little 13-year-old black girl. And there were girls that were 12, 13, and they were yelling. They were having so much fun during the show. So it was really nice to see. And so I there's a need, there's a demand, and we just need to continue. I know there's like a few little companies, like there's one company in Quebec, and they call themselves like the only Afro-descendant theater company in Quebec. And I'm like, I find that interesting, but they're only doing like classics with their brown bodies again, where I'm like, I want to create new narratives, you know.
Okay, so when you say classics, what do you mean? You mean like Shakespeare?
Like Antigone, you know.
Okay.
We're going to do Antigone, but you know, it's just like, okay, which is fun. But at the end of the day, I think so many things happen with BLM, with Indigenous, with so many things happen that we need to start writing new narratives to tell our stories. You know? And some people, you know how in Canada you won't learn about Indigenous stories and history until you go like to higher education.
Or you go into a bookstore and you find the Indigenous section, which is hidden in like a little two shelves.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So if this is how we're going to do it, then I then can create pieces to tell these stories and try to, you know, that's because I've worked on cruise ships mm-hmm. as well as a performer. And like being on the cruise ship and doing my theater studies, I was just like, okay, I went to fast food entertainment and this is classical entertainment.
Yeah.
How do I make these two collide? And that was the challenge with Aphrodisiac. It worked. Like it worked so great. So now I found my balance within performance and like physical theater and circ and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So now I want to continue doing that because people are very attracted to that. And it's just, like how do we bring these stories, this knowledge to the people, but being entertaining at the same time.
Yeah. So that people feel, because I feel like, especially with our stories, and I've created this this new handle called Books and Flicks, where I watch a lot of movies and I read a lot of books and I write about it. So I do a little blurb about it. And one of the things for me, I obviously am trying to watch more black stuff. Like I'll still watch, you know, the quote unquote mainstream stuff, but I try and make an effort to watch
the black stuff.
Native, read books about native lives and stuff like that. And one of the issues that I'm finding in our stories, especially is there's always, we're doing tragedy all the time.
Ooh, I'm so tired of trauma and tragedies. I can't, seriously. Let's talk about that because, like, for example, it annoys the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And even like with new, you know, directors and people here in Quebec, I like in films, I'm like, okay, but why are all your fucking shorts, so sorry for cursing, but why is it always fucking dramatic? Why is it always super sad? Why does our existence only exist in trauma?
Yep.
Why can't
it's always the father, the mother, or the child has died and they're trying to, or they're about to die. You know, they have a deep illness. Oh. Like I saw this beautiful, beautiful story. Like I'm getting chills just thinking about it. I believe it was on Netflix called The Waterman. And it's this magical story about a little boy who's trying to find this water man, but his mom is dying. You know, and the story is centered around the fact that he just wants to save her life. You know, and I'm just like, why do we have to write, why couldn't it be like just this kid who was fascinated by a water man? Why does it have to be his mother is dying? That's why, that's his reason for doing this. You know, how many magical, mystical things have we watched whereby, you know, it's a bunch of white people and they're just, oh my God, we found this universe that we're exploring. You know,
no,
the Chronicles of
you.
Narnia. The emphasis is not on whatever tragic thing. If they went through something tragic, it's not the crux of it. They just go through a closet and then they're in Narnia.
They were in a closet.
They're four kings. Mm-hmm.
No, I hear you. And I really want... Aphrodisiac was really intense. It's a solo of 2 hours. There's so much... Like more than 50% of it is really funny. And
right.
then there's a bit of... Like, it's a bit tragic towards the end, but, like, it ends well. It's like
right.
there's a nice ending. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
However, now, this is the only piece I've written like that.
Right.
And now I just want to do comedy. Because even me as an actor auditioning in Quebec, it's like most of the time it's always trauma.
Yeah.
And for the past 2 years, especially in this pandemic, because of inclusion,
diversity,
people of color.
Yeah.
Like I've been auditioning for like, it's always a plot line around police.
Mm-hmm.
You know, detective shit.
Yeah.
I'm always in a bad, even if I'm not the bad person, I'm bad because obviously I'm brown.
Right.
It's just so sad and I'm so tired and overwhelmed. I don't want to audition for these things anymore. I don't even want to be in these things anymore because
yeah.
I don't understand. The story has nothing to do with me. Me, I'm just an object that represents the bad within the whole storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
I had done a skit about that. And it's just like, yeah, I'm going to audition. I'm going to be a single mom with 5 children, a dog that's limping. I'm illiterate. Like, it's just like, it's a skit, but people were laughing.
Wow.
I did the skit for white people in a theater and they were laughing so hard.
Yeah.
But that was very like ironic because it's true.
Mm.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I want to write. I'm on the mission of Black joy right now.
Amen to that. Amen to that. I want to ask you a question, but we're going to save the question for the next segment because we do have to take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're tuning in for the first time, I'm speaking to Marilyn Cherie, who is an actress, an improv performer, a writer. Are you going to get into directing? Is that a thing?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Good.
I'm
speaking it into existence. She's an all-around performer here in Montreal. Keep it
just another kind of cage to get up in my psyche, to use me as an instrument to further push their puppet show. But I'm not inexperienced, and it's not my first rodeo. I'm not so shallow, Charlie. I call it too precisely. Separate bone from marrow so much so that they dislike me. Intuitive. Charlie, we be like fugitives. Until the universe responds to show them who the student is.
Woman cry. Woman cry.
Give life.
Gives us life.
Mother Mary and baby, the burden she carries all time.
Burden she carries.
Woman cry.
Woman cry.
Gives us
life. Gives us life.
And she begs and forgives us the sin and the sinners all time.
Begs and forgives us.
So them I go make war before we pray. When them I go make war before we pray. So them I go make war before we pray. When them I go make war before we pray.
You walk around so unassuming. You go don't shine your eyes, you don't put it on me. Put a liquor spell on me. What thing you do to me? You no go walk on me. You go see. You go nine nine nine. You go shake it. You go see that God is in La Bruja, eh, La Bruja. See Debbie die, she could die, my room. La Bruja, eh, La Bruja. See Debbie die, she could die, my room. La Bruja, eh, La Bruja. See Debbie die, she dies all in Yalila, eh, Yalila. Sufi woman, read me, room me till I fall asleep up on your bosom. Sufi woman, you're a lion, but you walk around so unassuming. Jimmy. Gypsy, gypsy woman, we go dance until we dizzy. Gypsy woman, know your power got me tipsy.
All I want from you is taking money out of road. The lies will beat me to the floor.
Violence.
It ain't your fist, it's your words.
Silence.
All in all, don't worry about me. Call and call won't blurry what I see. Camouflage, I see all that you can be. If you drop that bloody bread and fall on your knees. Cause bam, by any means necessary. Bam, by any means necessary. Bam. Any means necessary. Watch them bands stack tall, cause it's necessary. Bam. By any means necessary.
Did you get that pay?
Bam. By any means did you get that pay? By any means necessary. Watch them bands stack tall, cause it's necessary. Every day, every night, let you make me cry. Never understood like I was the reason. So I creep been like a TLC. Say I ain't but shit, friends got my heart that leave you sick. You see, all in all, don't worry about me. Pass falling fall, but won't flurry my dream.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back once again. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and on the air this evening we have Marilyn Cherie, who is an actress of Haitian descent, dramaturg, improviser, future director, all of the things, changing the face of theater, especially French theater in Montreal, one play at a time. Marilyn, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
You know, when you're a performer and an artist, time is your most precious commodity. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you taking the time out to be with us this evening. I had a question for you. It's a multi-pronged question. So first of all, for people who don't know, what is improv? That's one. Mm. And two, how do you use improv in your work? How have you incorporated that into your body of work?
Okay.
So what is improv first?
What is improv? Okay, so me, I'm going to explain what is French improv, because okay. It's not the same thing. It's not exactly the same thing. So l'improvisation, French improv, is really, it's very competitive, first of all, and okay. It's really big in Montreal. So me, I grew up around that, where you have teams with players, and it's just like you create different stories. And what Montreal is known for is being really good at, like, punching on people, like punchlines, jokes on jokes on jokes on jokes.
Okay.
And most of the people, even like that I grew up doing improv, French improv with, they all became comedians. See,
okay.
Jean Arnaud Soli, Mehdi Boussaïdan, you know, all these dudes, they were all doing improv. French improv. So it's really special how the circuit, like in within the CEGEPs and then the universities and like the semi-pro pro leagues, will build these next generation comedians,
right?
Basically. And it's really nice with improv because it's just like letting go of all your inhibition.
Mm-hmm.
The more comfortable you are on stage, you know, the better you're going to be. To respond, to be witty, to create universes, stories, stuff like that. on the go.
Okay.
And what I've come to realize with improv, I've done, did I do improv before theater? I think the two collided in my life. But what I've come to realize is that it's not because you do theater that you can do improv and vice versa. It's not because you do improv that you can do TV, whatever. It's not, when you can do it all, that's great.
Yep.
But it's just like there's like intricacies it's still different. That are different.
Yeah.
Yes. And you need to adapt.
You use different muscles for each genre. And by muscles, I don't necessarily mean your physical muscles, but your brain muscles.
But you can if you are a physical actor, and that's great to see on stage as well. So yeah, no. Improv is definitely something that saved me. I found it like it's, oh my God. Like,
how do you mean by, what do you mean by saved you?
Saved me in a sense that I, before coming to do my higher education in Montreal, more so like CEGEP, I was in a private school.
Oh boy.
In, right? Oh boy, already.
In Saint-Clair-Clair?
North Shore in Terrebonne at Collège Saint-Sacrement, which means it was a college for very rich people, white little kids. It's high school, sorry.
Right.
And it was terrible. It was like the five worst years of my life.
Wow.
Education-wise was great. Social-wise was terrible. Mm-hmm. It was terrible. And then improv really saved me because, I could just escape. I could just create other, realities, stuff like that. And when I got to Montreal, I just like took an even bigger place in my life for a few years. And improv was really great, really great for me. It helped me to write better as well. It's just like creating universes and being with very creative people. So it was really nice. But the competition aspect of it was really rough because Montreal, when I did it, like, on the North Shore in Terrebonne, it was something, but coming to Montreal, I understood how big it was. Like I said, it's just like the people who did improv with me are all comedians. C'est Rosalie, Bayanko, like they're all comedians now.
Right. So it's kind of like the movie Drumline where Nick Cannon's character comes from high school and he's like the hotness at his high school. And then he goes to college and then he's like, oh, but wait a minute, I'm actually not the hotness. It's actually the entire team, and I need to figure out how to become a part of this team.
Yeah, well, I was not trying to do what Nick Cannon did. Like, I just realized that it was actually a big deal, because for me, it was like, it saved me.
Right.
It was not necessarily just a hobby, but
you didn't take it as serious.
No, because literally in CEGEPs, they started to install this rule that you can do improv only like 4 years max, because people would just they would stay in CEGEP forever.
Right.
Which is live your life, dude. It's not cute.
Right. You need to grow past CEGEP.
Yeah, but I'm a very witty person. And so how do I use it? I don't know. Like, it's just, I love writing.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, when I did my show, this show, it's 2 hours,
right?
Really, it's 2 hours, but it can be an hour and 45 minutes,
right?
It's just that I improvise stuff,
okay,
and thus it is 2 hours,
okay?
But people don't know, so it's just like for the four representations, for example, there's a character and she's a hairdresser,
mm-hmm.
and she was telling a lot of things about like her love interest, like Tyrone.
Okay.
And at some point, by the fourth representations, like my creative team, they knew that like so many things happened between Selena and Tyrone, because it's never the same. But unless you see the four shows, you don't know all that went down between Selena and Tyrone. Because I would improvise every night and then I would add stuff to the drama of their relationship. So, but like my creative team, they know, they're like, oh my God, okay. So then this, then that. So every night I would think about more things to add.
Let me ask you something. Do you incorporate that into the advertising for the show?
No.
You should.
Right?
You should, because I mean, Think about it. If your creative team has seen four different shows, in essence,
yeah.
Can you imagine? It will kind of be like watching a sitcom.
Like
the same characters, the same little through line character goes through this and this and this. But listen, if you put this back on,
I should please make sure that
you say because then, you know, you might have someone who will come all four nights and just pack up the theater that much more. Two more people are coming every single night.
You never know which show
you're getting. Yeah.
And I love surprises in shows. Me, I'm all about, with my team, we're speaking about, okay, like the set is going to be this way, the music as well. And just like finding gems within a play. This is something very important for me because I don't like square things. I don't like very stiff theater.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's my Cirque side. So I'm just like, okay, we need to find like surprises here and there. But totally agree with that. So, and also what's fun. Yeah, go ahead.
Tell us more about Aphrodisiac, because you kind of keep talking about it and referring to the show. Because 2021 is not the beginning of Aphrodisiac by any means of the word. You've been doing this show for years now. I think even before you became part of the BTW mentorship program back in 2018.
Yeah.
Because I remember watching it at Mainline. And so, that wasn't the first time that you put it on. At
the Mainline. Yeah. Okay. So basically it's like, it's a text that started from a performance that I had done in my last year at Concordia in a class called Oral History Performances. And that's where I met Lydie Duvisson, she's like an artistic associate at BTW, but like she's so much more than that. She's amazing. And Lydie, she saw the first performance I'd done on Aphrodisiac. Mm-hmm. And at that time in 2016, I was very curious about like the natural hair movement and everything that was happening worldwide, you know, on the African continent, North America, you know, all that. Like, I was really intrigued about the kids fighting for the right to have their natural hair and like abuse and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So then I created a little piece. And after that, I continued to write that piece. And I presented something at the Mainline that you saw.
Yeah.
And then I presented the same thing again in a different form the same year during summer at La Risée, at Espace La Risée.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like looking back, these two performances, like I consider them more so as labs than an actual performance. I tried stuff.
Yeah.
Say I tried stuff out. And then my mentor, Alexis Martin, was just like, okay, continue to work on it and like really try. And that's why I see them more as lab.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point I continued to write, I continued to research because that's what I do. I just read so many books, so many things, conducted so many interviews. And I finally got into Le CEAD in Le Centre des Auteurs Dramatiques. Mm-hmm. So I became an actual dramaturge during the pandemic, which was nice. And I continued to work on the text, but I rewrote it from scratch. It's not the same show at all.
Okay.
It's not at all what I've done in 2018 or what I've done in 2016. It has nothing to do with it.
Wow.
It's a 2 hour solo show.
It's a 2 hour solo epic.
Solo epic. Yeah, it is. And it's great. And like Lydie, she directed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes place. It's a l'horizon. C'est un horizon in the head of a little girl, 13-year-old little black girl in Laval.
Okay.
So basically, it's the story of Rizon, who sees everything that's happening to the little girl, who lives all the microaggressions, who is going through everything and trying to guide this little girl in this journey where she might start to hate herself because of her hair.
Mm-hmm.
And also because of the gaze and of everybody else around her. So what was very intense with the show, looking back, is that it's a comedy. It's super funny. You know, you have the Rizom. It's like the new, she's going back to school, the little girl, you know, in the fall. It's really cute. Mm-hmm. And then the Rizom is having this boxing match against like a rubber band. Like, it's so funny, but it's a very funny comedic play.
Right.
Until we get to talk about real things. What's really real. Know?
Yeah.
And it's like me talking to all these characters going through so many things physically. Mm-hmm. There's like the principal of the school, the little girl's going at, Monsieur Trudeau, who's not very nice. And mm-hmm. then there's her teacher, her history teacher, Monsieur Legault. And then there's her gym teacher, wow. Monsieur Dupin.
Wow.
And then there's like a little
wink,
white boy.
Wink. Wink, wink. You know,
the little white boy in her class who's like a wigger called Kevin. So oh, she's just God. Like, it's really hard. And it's right. like all these male white figures around her, mm-hmm. objectifying her, doing all kinds of microaggression. There's a lot of things going on within the life of this little girl. And she's yeah, he's almost trying to make her encounter and remember her history through all of that. Mm-hmm. But at the very end of the play, there's this moment where she puts perm on her head and it burns her scalp. It wow. burns her.
Yeah.
So, but I'm a Rizom, so basically I'm burning and I'm literally dying on stage.
Wow.
And then there's this point where she goes to the pharmacy to try and find products.
Right.
You know, just like oil or whatever, mm-hmm. just to heal her head before mm-hmm. going back to school on Monday,
right.
During the weekend. And it's this whole scene about, you know, the products being loved.